I'm a big believer that innovation should be something that is everybody at the company's job, and that should be something that you know, organically we do. And so we do try to instill that, I would say, into our culture. And innovating can mean a lot of different things. It could be innovating on a new product. It could be innovating the way you deliver an existing product. But this sort of like culture and drive for thinking about the problem differently every day and really testing your assumptions and testing your biases every day.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Keep Moving Forward, the podcast from X-Team for tech professionals who are passionate about growth, leadership and innovation. I'm your host, Gemma Versace, Chief Customer Officer at X-Team. In every episode, we sit down with leaders who are redefining how technology teams work, grow and lead. People who understand that performance begins with connection. Today, I'm joined by Joel Ron, Chief Technology Officer at Thomson Reuters. Joel leads a global organization of more than 5,000 engineers and technologists, and he brings a rare blend of deep technical expertise and practical leadership experience. His career spans mechanical engineering, machine learning, startup entrepreneurship, and large-scale enterprise transformation, including the AI company he co-founded that TR later acquired. In our conversation, Joel explains how TR approaches innovation in high-stakes domains like law, tax, and compliance, and why giving teams room to explore is essential for building AI-powered products the right way. He shares how his teams balance experimentation with rigor and why grounding technical work in subject matter expertise is essential in high-stakes domains. Throughout our discussion, Joel offers a grounded look at what it means to lead through rapid technological change. He emphasizes adaptability, curiosity, and giving teams the space to learn, iterate, and invent new ways of working. Let's get started. Hi, Joel. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
Excellent. Let's get straight into it. And let's start with your journey. So you started your journey in mechanical engineering and now lead a global team of over 5,000 people. Can you take us through what your journey has been today?
Yeah, I've had what I would call a pretty unconventional path to this point. As you said, I'm originally a mechanical engineer by background. Started my educational career working in simulation, working in signal processing. I think that was really where I cut my teeth, if you could say it like that, in terms of computer science, and sort of just evolved from there as technology evolved. You know, both of those disciplines, particularly signal processing, have a lot of mathematical computation, you know, elements to them, which I think serendipitously was sort of a natural lead into working in AI and machine learning quite a lot from an early part of my career, which I did. As things go, I started a company with a few of my co-founders a handful of years ago in AI and machine learning, specifically around natural language processing and contract interpretation and enterprise search as sort of primary focal points for us. And I guess about 3.5 years ago, we were acquired by Thomson Reuters to really help them expand what they were doing on the contract analysis side of things in relation to use of their team of practical law experts, which, you know, Thomson Reuters is one of the largest employers of experts in law, but also tax, audit, compliance, et cetera, in the world. And so we had built some technology that was really useful for allowing lawyers in this case to build supervised machine learning models in really an end-to-end way from data curation all the way to deployment and evaluation without engagement of data scientists. So think about like a scale AI type application, but really built around lawyers and legal contract interpretation. So that was really one of the sort of core pieces of IP that we built that we scaled into Thomson Reuters when we were acquired. And the rest has evolved since then. I mean, since joining Thomson Reuters, obviously integrating, you know, the company and the technology previously, but also really helping the company on this journey of adapting to generative AI and what it's meant for our products, our customers, and what we do. And I think fortunately I was in a good position at that time to help be influential to the company, but I was also working with a tremendous team of now 250 plus machine learning engineers and scientists in our Thomson Reuters labs who, you know, that organization's existed for 30 plus years at TR. And, you know, a lot of people don't know this about TR, but we have quite a rich history of AI and machine learning in our products, particularly in the areas of information retrieval and search type problems, given the complex domains that we work in. So we really had a lot of ingredients to be successful here. And it's just been a matter of really doubling down on those ingredients and trying to capitalize them on them in whatever ways we could, which I think we've done a pretty good job of thus far.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you mentioned, I mean, you know, the TR name is very much recognizable worldwide. And what a fantastic opportunity for you to, you know, obviously with all of your wonderful experience, but with them acquiring your business to now lead such a large and globally diverse team sitting there as CTO. It sounds like, you know, the next evolution and the next journey for you at TR seems like a really exciting one. In relation to innovation at TR, do you have specific innovation teams, or is it very much your teams are allowed to, well, allowed is probably the wrong word, but that they can innovate organically as it's coming to them as they're in the creation and the development phase? Or is it more specifically around you really being able to target what and where you specifically want to focus on from an innovation perspective?
You know, I'm a big believer that innovation should be something that is everybody at the company's job, and that should be something that, you know, organically we do. And so we do try to instill that, I would say, into our culture. And innovating can mean a lot of different things. It could be innovating on a new product. It could be innovating the way you deliver an existing product. But this sort of like culture and drive for, you know, thinking about the problem differently every day and really testing your assumptions and testing your biases every day, I would say is culturally something that is important. And I think something we try to instill across the board. You know, I do think it's natural though that a team that has like a specific product goal in mind with a specific product function that they're already serving is naturally more constrained than some team that's sort of just like off, like thinking blue sky. And so we do try to create more specificity for teams so they know what their mission in life is, right? And is their job to like deliver something X percent better than current state, or is their job to think blue sky about the problem? And, you know, that can mean you have separate teams that have like separate remits of innovation within the company. Certainly I mentioned TR Labs, I would say, is one of the groups that's more involved with the blue sky or, you know, applied research that we might be doing. But I do think like the sort of like drive for, you know, organic innovation is something we try to push through all of our teams in some way.
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks for that. So also you mentioned that obviously when you are developing products, there's lots of different iterations and, you know, it can be moving quite quickly, but there is, it's so important to be able to do that touch base with the subject matter experts or your clients. But what frameworks have developed, have helped you, I should say, sorry, keep pace with your timelines, but also at the same time without having your teams burn out?
You know, I would say like we've used a number of these, you know, technologies that have started to evolve in this place. There are various teams using like Pydantic, LangFuse, LangGraph. We've had a number of teams that have, you know, started operating more on like A2A or the Claude SDK or OpenAI's new apps SDK. And so I would say we haven't necessarily standardized on any one. And I think one of the things that we've actually learned is that like driving too much standardization early on, particularly as the space is evolving quite fast, sort of like locks you in a way that actually slows you down instead of speed you up. And then on the flip side, what we've learned is that like if you don't settle fast enough and you sort of leave it too open-ended, then you also slow down. So I really do think there is kind of like some middle ground there, and you have to be perceptive about like, when is there enough critical mass or collective action in the market around a particular, you know, tool or technology or framework, like MCP would be a good example where there's enough collective action in the market today around this to say, yeah, like we're going to use MCP as a company. And like, this is going to be something that we all do and we don't really question it, but you have to, you know, be an early mover there, but also not too early to the point where like, you know, the whole world changes out from under you quite quickly. And so we've tried to be pretty judicious about how quickly to standardize and when we do standardize, you know, to have some conviction around it.
Yeah, fabulous. Thank you. And across TR's legal, tax and compliance portfolios, what are some of the signals that you and your team look for to know whether or not an AI product is really delivering true value to the customer?
Yeah, that's a really good question, actually. And like, honestly, something we spent a good bit of time kind of debating and researching a little bit. And I would say, you know, there's a lot of objective and subjective ways to measure that. I think, you know, subjectively speaking, like, I love hearing customer testimonials through our sales team and our customer success team. And like, I hear these anecdotes or examples of like, a team of lawyers did something they could have done in a month and they did it in 10 minutes kind of thing. Like, these anecdotes are real, and those like really speak volumes to me in terms of giving me confidence that like these solutions that we're putting into the market are really having like tangible impact. I think quantitatively, we also look at usage of the products, and I get reports on this week on week, and I see, you know, substantial double-digit growth week on week of users engaging with the tools more and more. And like, to me, that is very objective evidence that like, that many users, and certainly the majority of users, I would say, are finding tremendous value in it because they're going back to it a second and a third and a fourth and the time to do more work. And that's, I think, one of the best points of validation in the court.
Yeah, I definitely couldn't agree more. Next question that I do have, one of the amazing statistics that stood out during our conversation that you shared with us is that at TR you have 80% user adoption for AI tools. Now, across a 5,000 plus strong workforce, this, Joel, is just an absolutely truly amazing achievement. I think everybody that is listening to this episode just wants to know, how did you bring your team along for this journey? And, you know, how have you been so successful in getting such a large uptake of 80% of users that are regularly using and adopting AI tools across TR?
Well, you know, one of the first things we did as a leadership team, I remember sitting down with my leadership team, and we sort of all kind of came to the conclusion that like, we got to walk the talk. Like, if we're building products and putting them in the market and telling our customers, oh, you need to transform yourselves to use AI, and these AI products are going to accelerate your work and improve the quality of your work. Like, if we're not doing that ourselves, then like, we're being quite hypocritical about what we're selling. And I think that was the first like really, you know, salient moment where we said, okay, like this is something we've got to lean into internally as well as externally. And AI dev tools in particular in the engineering space has been one of like the fastest evolving and fastest improving segments of AI in the last few years. And I think what our experience has been is there was like certainly this early minority of early movers in the engineering space who had seen some good value from it. And there was an early majority of those users who were disappointed in some way. Like, they expected it to sort of do this magic trick, and like it did not do the magic trick that they were hoping it would. And it fell short in some way. And there are hundreds of ways in which it fell short. And I think what we saw is like a really fast influx at first, and then quite a big slowdown. And what we did, two things at that point in time. One is we really forced it from top down. And we said, I know that you guys have had some struggles, and I know there are some failures, but like, we are going to be persistent through those failures, and we're going to keep trying. We're going to figure out what works, because there's enough signal that something will work. We just have to learn how to find it. And when we saw, the second thing we did is when we saw teams find it, we tried to get loud about it. We tried to be very vocal internally about what worked, how they did it, why it worked. We inter-sourced it so it was available to everybody in the company to go use and duplicate and build off of. And I think this pattern of sharing the things that were working allowed the organization to learn together a lot faster. And at some point, I don't exactly know when it was, but at some point there was enough understanding that there was a path to success here if you spent enough time finding it and sort of building out the systems around it in order to be successful. And we gave teams the space to spend the time to do that. You know, we said the expectation that like, yeah, this might slow you down a little bit for the first month or first 2 months or 3 months, and that's okay. But like, be persistent, because there's likely light at the end of this tunnel. And I think giving people the sort of space and encouragement to be persistent through that and giving them examples of what good look like help us kind of move through that like period of disillusionment, if you will. And certainly there are areas of deficiency still today where like we think it's something's going to work and it doesn't quite work. And that's fine. But I think we're starting to see more wins than losses at this point on that path.
Yeah, which is great. And I think the 2 points that you called out there that are really important, and I think given the success that you've had also for listeners to be able to take on board, is that, you know, in a world where a lot of leaders are very open to a lot of collaboration and a lot of employee-led innovation and things like that, it's also, to achieve really successful results, it's also sometimes totally reasonable for leadership to mandate and to top down and say, this is something that our business is going to get behind. It's an investment that we're making, and we expect the user adoption and the buy-in from across the teams. And then the other piece that you called out was really making sure that you get loud around the successes and really wanting to continually show and highlight what good looks like, but also for those people that are persisting, that are buying in, what some of the individual and team successes look like as a result of that too. I think that's a really powerful and compelling way to be able to help bring people along for the journey. And I guess the flip side of that is also, yes, with top down and getting loud with the successes, what type of pushback did you get, however? Because even though, you know, with all of the right communication strategy and the, you know, the talking the talk, but then showing them how to walk the walk, did you get much, I guess, visceral reaction from your teams where they were quite hesitant about it? And, you know, with a lot of noise around AIs taking everybody's jobs, asking for such adoption within your teams, no doubt, you know, there were lots of questions around, you know, are we training these AI tools to ultimately take our jobs? How did you work in addressing those fears across your team?
Yeah, I would say, you know, in certain pockets, we did get some pretty direct feedback, you know, to the negative. And there were a number of negative reactions through that process. And, you know, and I think the way that we dealt with them was frankly just in stride. You know, one of the observations I made very early on about who was, you know, finding success in using these tools and who wasn't, is that it was some of our best engineers in the company. And in fact, those engineers were the biggest skeptics at the beginning. And at the end, they were like the biggest proponents. And they went from being kind of 10x people to 100x people. And it was that realization that I think framed my reaction to a lot of these negative, was like, you know, I can point to specific examples of like really phenomenal engineers in the company that everybody looked up to as people who were leading the charge there. And I could also put that out to say, look, these tools are not here to like make everybody slightly better or like shave costs, you know, out of the organization. They're here to like elevate the best of the best of our engineering talent. And if anything, we are out there trying to hire more phenomenal talent because we find that like that's the most like a creative accelerant to development that we can get. So I think for us, like pointing to those examples and really elevating some of these people who have been staples of our engineering team for a long time as examples, we gave people the right signal that like this was the path we were on. And then lastly, I would say is just being real clear about the counter. It's like, look, you can use these tools and automate things and you could be concerned about the future of your job, or you cannot use them and be concerned about the future of your job. Like that really is the sort of mental mask to work through, because I think that's the reality that we all face today. And I put myself in that bucket too. And I was very clear with my teams that I put myself and my leadership team puts themselves in that same bucket. And none of us are immune to that. But leaning away from that change is not the right way to adapt to it, because that's surely not going to end, I think, in a positive outcome for any of us. So that's kind of how we framed it.
Thank you. And it would have been really important and empowering for your team as well to be able to see you and your leadership team also leading by example, not doing do as I say, not as I do, to be able to show them you guys leading the way would have also certainly had an impact on helping the motivation levels across the team for that buy-in. With a lot of, obviously TR being such a large business, you would no doubt be very focused on really wanting to be able to work with the individuals within your team in mapping out what, you know, the career advancement and the skills acquisition and growth opportunity looks like for them. How are you doing that in a world where, you know, AI is really doing a lot of the, can be seen, I should say, as doing a lot of the heavy lifting with this? How are you working with, you know, your HR department or professional development department, training department, in making sure that you can continue to be able to help your teams with their career progression and skills acquisition in this AI dominated world at the moment that we do live in?
Yeah. I mean, in terms of training and enablement, we've put out lots of internal materials on this. We work with our partners, major cloud providers, the major frontier labs, to do a lot of, you know, hands-on co-development or workshops or things like that with those teams to educate our employees. We have tried to really be fluid about our talent movement across the organization, particularly from labs into the rest of engineering. So in areas where we had this historical AI and machine learning experience, and trying to bring that closer to the rest of the engineering teams to give them an opportunity to develop those muscles and develop that understanding as well. We've also instituted new career paths for AI engineering specifically. And again, AI engineering may sort of be like the cloud engineering 15 years ago, where, you know, cloud engineering used to be like a specific title that we called an engineer who worked in the cloud. And now it's just like every engineer on the planet. AI engineering may very well be the same thing and probably will be. But today it sort of stands for something rather specific for us, at least. And we've been specific around what are the skills and expectations of an engineer with that title. And that's been a way to really memorialize like what is unique about building AI products versus not, and give people a roadmap of like what skills they might need to develop in order to move up that curve a little bit more. And so I think a combination of all those things have really helped, you know, move the organization forward in terms of climbing that curve. I think it also helps that, like, you know, AI from the top down, like from our CEO down, has been a common thread of priority across our entire product portfolio. So it's not just this like one component of one application. It's really pervasive. And so almost every one of our teams, you know, can escape the impetus to really do something material here and lean into it. So I think that really helps kind of catalyze the organization in that direction as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And also speaks to the level of investment and commitment that TR has for their staff as well, is such robust plans to be able to make sure that there is that continual learning, but also the continual opportunity that, your team members can be really safe in the knowledge that there is that continued development opportunity for them at TR.
Yeah, they see that. And they see our CEO, you know, Steve, say we're investing $200 million a year in AI. And they have some confidence that this isn't just like a flash in the pan. This isn't going away. Like, this is here to stay and like something I should get on board with because it's not going away.
If a CTO at a mid-sized company came to you and said, Joel, you know, where do I begin with Gen AI? What would you say? And I guess to compartmentalize it, what's the smallest and the smartest place to start given your experience?
Well, I think the most helpful place to start is baselining on what the models are capable of out of the box. I think, you know, and that bar continues to shift, but I think a lot of people maybe like miss that as a baseline. And then they like, or they take that as a baseline and they just jump to like, I'm going to go build some application on top of what the model's knowledge is. I think those are probably the wrong paths. I think you got to start with like, what is the baseline capability of the model? And then you need to ask yourself as a business or a company, like, why do customers buy from me? Like, what are they paying me for today that nobody else in the market can deliver? And you need to figure out, like, how do I take what is unique to me and layer it on top of what this technology is capable of to deliver value that is unique to me? And I think people, that second part of the equation, which is what is unique to me and how can I add to it, is the hard part. And I think that's where you got to spend a lot of time really being decisive and crisp and like inward looking in terms of what is valuable about the proposition of your business. And but once you find that and you like double and triple and quadruple down on it, you know, and you make it as big and as meaningful as you possibly can, but don't miss that part of the equation because I think that is ultimately what makes you unique as a business.
Yeah, fantastic. That's some really good advice. And looking forward ahead, so the next kind of 12 to 18 months, what do you think are going to be the main challenges or opportunities that engineering leaders really need to be ready for in this AI era? What are some of the challenges, opportunities that you think are the most important for them to focus on?
You know, a couple of the challenges, one is like keeping pace with technology. I think building teams that can be adaptable, like I said before, and constantly reinvent themselves is a challenge. I think security will be a growing challenge. I think it's becoming harder to build secure applications as they become more distributed. And it's also the threats of security, I think, are becoming more pervasive than they have ever been before. So I think the challenges of security are a growing one. I think in terms of opportunities, though, there are many opportunities. A couple that I would pick off. One is really the opportunity, like particularly for us, like we have a large like legacy portfolio of products that do very specific and meaningful things, but they perhaps are quite narrow in what they do. Like the ability to think of these things as an ecosystem of products that work together with an agent that orchestrates between them, I think is a really like powerful concept that really brings new life to old products and applications and businesses. And there's really like, I think, a huge opportunity to kind of rethink existing portfolios and products in new ways. And the second thing I would say is an extension of that is also like rethinking markets or groups of products in different ways. So like the ability for third parties and partner companies to have applications that interact with each other more seamlessly than just by API, I think is a growing opportunity. And I think an opportunity for products to kind of products and services to work in more seamless ways than they could before.
Yeah, thank you. That was really insightful for not only the challenges that you've identified, but also really importantly as well, what some of these wonderful opportunities are across the next 12 to 18 months as well. And in that vein, with keep moving forward over the course of the next kind of 12 to 18 months that's in front of us, as a CTO that's leading through one of the most disruptive shifts in recent history, What does keep moving forward mean to you, and how do you communicate that to your teams to keep moving forward?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I would say keep moving forward to me means A, like knowing where you're moving in the first place, like having a goal in mind, having an outcome in mind, having a purpose in mind. To me, it starts and ends with that. And then secondly is like, I think not being afraid to fail along the path of getting there. I think there are a lot of things that we do every day that I mentioned a couple of them earlier, where we do them and we realize we did them the wrong way. And we, you know, the worst thing we can do is do them the wrong way the second time, or do them the same way we did them the first time, the second time. And I think just being a learning organization is probably the most important thing you can do to kind of ensure that you don't fall victim to being too afraid to fail, because there are certainly many things you're going to do wrong along that journey. So I would say those two things, like having a purpose and knowing where you're going, and having the humility and willingness to fail along the way, because you certainly will.
I love that answer. I love the answer because, you know, sometimes the whole methodology or the feelings behind keep moving forward is just kind of, you know, keep moving forward at all costs. But the two things that you've called out, that you can't really move forward unless you know where you're going, is just such an important and insightful comment. But also, I really also love what you really highlight there, is to say, yes, keep moving forward, but also make sure that you do take the time to kind of do that audit of what potentially didn't go 100% right, and make sure, to your point, that you don't replicate any failure into the future, and really learn from it and communicate it and sit in it and know where and how and why the failure potentially occurred, and make sure that it don't happen again, to get back straight back into that lane to take you where you want to go for the overall purpose. So thank you so much, Joel. I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. Thanks so much for being so detailed and sharing just so openly and honestly your thoughts, and some wonderful advice that has been shared with our Keep Moving Forward listeners as well. So thank you so much, Joel.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I very much enjoyed the conversation.
My conversation with Joel underscored how powerful it is when leaders create conditions for discovery. His approach shows that innovation grows when teams have room to explore ideas, test assumptions, and learn from what they build, especially in environments where accuracy and trust matter most. Joel also highlighted the importance of communicating clearly during times of change. By setting expectations, giving teams the time to experiment, and celebrating what works, he helped drive remarkable adoption of AI tools inside a global engineering organization. His experience shows that people become more confident with technology when they see leaders using it, supporting it, and sharing real examples of its impact. What stood out most was his perspective on adaptability. As AI capabilities shift month to month, Joel emphasized the need for teams who are curious, humble, and willing to rethink how they work. That mindset, combined with meaningful goals and a willingness to learn, is what helps organizations keep moving forward. Join us next time for more conversations with technology leaders who inspire us to grow, lead, and innovate. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube Music. And if you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your network. Until next time.